The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Welcome back. Now, I've said this before over the years. Harry Cooper has single-handedly, with his wonderful organization, Shark Hunters, literally opened doors to lost history of World War II and thereafter that we otherwise would never have known. And this has built up into a remarkable achievement over a number of years. And I think all of you who are members of Shark Hunters or who listen to Harry each month when he's on. We have picture stories, we do take trips, we do all kinds of things. But Harry has been so well connected over the last 35, 40 years, I don't know, it's a long time, with some of the remarkable figures of World War II, most especially the U-boat captains and others that he's met involved with that part of the war. And you know what he's all about. You've been to the site, you've seen the books, you've read the books, you've understood that these are really remarkable events that Harry was able to experience, albeit second-handedly, through these individuals who lived them and became friends of Harry's later on. Don Angel is one. We're going to talk more about him. There are many things we're going to talk about this first hour. Our second hour tonight, we'll have a very special guest on from Australia because there has been a major confirmation of something that Harry already knew pretty much about, and it is now confirmed that there is a so-called black boat, a black ops U-boat that was sunken intentionally in Argentina. And I'll just leave it at that for the moment. I'm going to let Harry roll this all out. Because what this discovery of the scuttled U-boat means is that we have a huge piece of physical history that we didn't have before that fills in a lot of blanks in the narrative of what really happened to much of the German high command and high government officials after the war. Now, I've contributed a few things, nothing like Harry, but I do know that American DC-4 long-range transports were flying countless numbers of Germans, German families, German wealth, out of Germany after the war to South America. That's a fact. We also know that many Germans made their way south by ship and, in one case, by a very large airplane. And I think some of you know what we're talking about here. So this new discovery is extraordinary. I know a little bit about it, and I'm going to learn along with all of you tonight as Harry lays it out for us. But my first thought was, this boat has got to be raised. It's not a war grave. The boat was scuttled. And because it carried people, it completed its task, and then they took it out about a mile or so and sunk it. And it's been found. And it's in not very deep water. It's quite diveable. So anyhow, this is a major historical revelation. I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to connect a lot more dots than we have ever been able to formally connect before. Admiral, welcome aboard and welcome back.
thank you very much. It's really hard to follow that introduction.
It's true.
This underscores something that we have known all along. Incidentally, I'm getting a lot of emails all of a sudden saying, hey, the photos aren't up yet. So I just pass that on to you.
Ask them to reload the homepage.
Okay.
We held them off until 10 minutes before airtime. And they, because we didn't want everybody to go through there scatter them to the seven winds. But
seven winds, okay. Well, I just reloaded my page a couple of times, and it's still not there.
All right. Well, let me get...
Norberto!
Unfortunately, he does mess up. Give me 2 seconds here. When did you find out that we have confirmation? Now, you already knew it, but formal confirmation. When did that happen, that there is a sunken boat fitting a lot of platforms that we've talked about over the years?
Hang on a sec. We got something from Norburn.
Yeah.
Okay. He says, Jeff told me to put it minutes before the program, take a look
10 minutes. 10 minutes before airtime.
Well,
that's,
anyhow.
5 minutes to the top of the hour.
I must say this.
He's not been the same.
Yeah.
He's a good man. He's had so much work, and it's just, it's overwhelming sometimes. He's a machine. He doesn't
slow
down.
Poor baby. I'm up at 4:30 every morning. I've been going since 4:30, haven't had any rest, and it's now 9 o'clock at night, and I'm not a young guy like him, so I'm having a hard time punching his tough card to send it
everybody
to the chaplain.
Everyone who's doing meaningful things on this planet, it seems, is working awfully hard now.
Yeah.
It's just that kind of a thing. No, Norberto works very, very hard. He does many things simultaneously.
Well, he does good work.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's the best I've ever known.
That's good.
Here's the other thing. You work late. Last night, we were emailing, and I was up till 5:30 last night. That's in a.m.,
right.
And I start at 9 in the morning. So it's the same routine. And if I don't do it, and if you don't do it, and if Norberto doesn't do it, it doesn't get done.
Guys, I don't know about you, but me, this is my passion.
Of course.
I can just fold up and retire and play golf, but that's almost as bad as life in prison. Incidentally, on your front page here, that gal that's talking about how we've been convinced to eradicate ourselves, she's a good-looking lady. Who the heck is she?
I finally got her name. I will look it up as we talk.
It was a rhetorical question, I guess. Okay, I've just shut down and reloading.
It's there.
I still don't see any link to photos.
It's there. It says gallery.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay, gallery. Hey, I'm not as dumb as I thought. Well, yeah, I guess I am. Okay.
I thought we had more pictures than that. Oh, well.
Let's see. Nope, that's all that we had. I had 19 on mine, and then Andreas had about another dozen or so, which he'll talk about them when he comes on at 10 o'clock.
Right.
But we'll start whenever you think we should start.
Well, what I'd like to do is just do a general overview, rather quick, of what happened after the war. How many people went down there, name some of the key names and so forth. Some of them we flew down there. Some of them made their own way down there.
Right.
And then we're going to find out about this particular Black Ops boat, unusual U-boat.
Some of the important ones who went down there, how about Adolf Hitler? He's probably the most prominent one that went to South America.
Well, and I must say, let me interrupt here, because if it weren't for you, we wouldn't have been able to break the story worldwide where he and Eva Braun went, show pictures. You went there. We've told the story of Inalco 7-8 times now. I don't know how many times, a lot of times, but we were the first to do it. You made it all possible. Absolutely.
Now, that was thanks to
Don Angel
Alcazar de Velasco in the beginning. He sent me a 114-page long, single-space typewritten letter, which has become my book, Hitler in Argentina. And we've added, I'd say probably 100 pages of CIA reports and letters back and forth between me and Don Angel and between myself and Otto Wermuth, the skipper of U-530. It's come together, but then, of course, there were a couple of hack writers who wrote their own books about Hitler's escape.
Yeah.
A couple of years after my book.
Ah, they're thieves and phonies and frauds. They abound
all over the planet. Yeah, one of them is dead. That's Gerard Williams. He's dead. And he and his publisher are still being sued by friends of mine because he apparently, allegedly, so they claim, and I know this a lot more than I'm allowed to say, but he took things, data, information that he was going to pay for, and he just forgot to pay for it. And he also offered, I'm staying away from names, you'll notice. He offered this one young fella $20,000 to steal some photos and documents from a lady I know down there, and this young man was so honest, he went to that lady and told her what was going on. So they're all suing Williams and his publisher, whatever. He's dead, so he's out of the picture. Mm-hmm. And the other one is Jerome Corsi. He wrote a book. And both of them were terribly flawed. I mean, if you're going to write a book that's a factual account of something, you better damn well be right. If you make major mistakes, it pretty well negates the
entire
book.
Well, these people, what they do is they cut and paste segments together, and then they write the bridges. And if the bridges aren't accurate, which in many cases they aren't, it casts a shade over the whole piece. You can't do that.
For instance, the
woman at the top of the homepage, her name is Laura, A-B-O-L-I, Aboli, or Aboli, I don't know which. And I think she's in the U.K.
Okay.
Laura's entrepreneurial career started in 2000, blah, blah, blah. Whatever. She did a wonderful job of putting it all together in short form. It's 4 minutes long.
Yeah, four minutes, if I remember correctly.
You got it.
So, getting back to,
the other two writers.
Clowns. Yeah, these so-called writers.
Jerome Corsi and
Gerard Williams.
Williams, yeah.
Yeah. We refer to them with a couple of different names. Laurel and Hardy will do for now. But the biggest stupidity, they claim that Hitler escaped on board U-530, which is absolutely wrong, stupid, ridiculous. Hitler was claustrophobic. He got seasick easily. So to think he was going to spend 2 or 3 months in a steel tube, smelly old steel tube, bouncing around in the ocean, it just idiotic. And U-530 was out to sea 3 days before Hitler was seen at his birthday party, and 530 went to New York on a combat mission, and they fired at a couple of ships. Fortunately, they missed, and then they got the surrender order. If they were going to try to have Hitler escape even on a submarine, it sure as hell wouldn't be on a combat patrol when 9 out of 10 submarines were not coming back from their first patrols in those days. So, you know, and of course they made that foolish Hunting Hitler TV show about, which anybody who has seen it and reported back to me, they really believe it was a farce. I didn't even get a thank you note from them guys.
Funniest thing. Funniest thing. All right, let's steer back to what we're going to do tonight.
Okay. But
by way of a preface, Don Angel's letters to you.
Yeah.
You're going to have them translated. This is another find. Harry's had them for many, many years. And who else wrote you a raft of letters? Who else?
Otto Wermuth, the skipper of 530.
So I didn't want to get the skipper wrong, but yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Otto's letters, Don Angel's letters, we're going to get those translated, and maybe next month, if there is a next month, we'll have them on as a Christmas present for everybody. These are phenomenal letters written many years ago. So that'll
in
be
the
fun.
90s.
Yeah. It's like 30 years
well,
ago.
Well, with Don Angel and also with Wermuth, in the late 80s, 1980s.
Okay.
Then into
almost.
The 90s.
Right. All right. Well, that's another thing. So what we're going to do tonight is give you proof that a U-boat, at least one, was taken down there with a very special passenger, either manifest or, shall we say, dry goods. And after it was offloaded of either or both, it was scuttled, and it is there. It has been found. And I want it raised. It's not a war grave.
All it takes is money. Well, you got to have permission from whoever the hell has control.
Well, Argentina shouldn't have a problem. It's not a war. It wasn't a war boat, as such. It was
a transport. It was not a war grave.
So it should be raised and cleaned, blasted, preserved somehow. And the whole story. It's phenomenal. And I'm sure Argentina
would be a great tourist attraction.
Well, it's all about money, remember? You wave the green stuff, people usually wake up and pay attention.
Yeah, it's all about the Benjamins.
Yeah. Yes. Okay, so the background of this, but could there be others? Let me just throw that out there. A couple more boats here and there? Scuttles?
Is that a possible? Rhetorical question or one for which you like an answer?
You take it as you will.
This is not the only one.
See? Look, my instincts are still good. 93
so
years
even,
old.
You're even speaking Spanish.
It.
You said, see. So we're not going to touch on any other boats at this point in time.
Got it.
But
well,
there's
that's
a
the
lot
Jack
more
Benny.
Stories.
Yeah, the Jack Benny Mel Blanc thing. See, sigh, sue. Remember that one?
Yeah, but you that don't. Was way back when I was a kid.
Yeah, I know. I got recordings. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, you weren't even born then.
No, but I loved history. And I go look.
Yeah.
I bought all the Jack Benny programs many, many years ago, and they're just wonderful time travel. And
he was from the Chicago area.
You know, Sheboygan or Waukegan? Waukegan.
Waukegan. Waukegan, yeah.
Yeah.
Sheboygan's in Wisconsin, but Waukegan is about 40 miles north of Chicago.
Our program has been on
Kibelski.
The air. Benny Kibelski. Our program's been on the air longer than Jack Benny was on radio, which was an age.
Oh, okay.
So we're real proud of that.
Okay, yeah, why not? I've been on your show coming on 11 years. It was February of 2013. So this coming February, right. It'll be 11 years.
I only wish it had started 10 years earlier than that, but we've done good. You've done great.
Well, we're leaving our footprint.
Yes, we are. All right, tonight's footprint is under about 98 feet of water, and it's a big footprint.
It is. It is.
What else can you tell us about this? So this is the one that at low tide some people could say they've flown over, and it looks like a U-boat down there.
Nope, that's not the one.
Okay, that's another one. All right.
Yeah, we won't even talk about the other one.
I didn't say anything. This one.
Let's go through the history a little bit here in pictures. Yeah. Number one, that's our friend Otto Wermuth, skipper of U-530. He was a member of Shark Hunters for many years, and he gave us a lot of information about himself, his time in the Kriegsmarine. And his boat had been involved in some spook work before he became the skipper. It met with a Japanese boat, I think it was I-29, somewhere in the central Atlantic, and his boat was one of those German U-boats that was loaded with gold and silver, and it really was, because they were meeting with this Japanese I-boat, and they transferred the gold and whatever else over to the Japanese boat, and they took aboard some war material from the Japanese boat, mercury, which is necessary to make detonators, right, for shells and rifle cartridges, etc., mercury fulminate, and various other things. So they made the exchange before Wehrmuth was skipper, and each one turned around to head back home, and U-530 made it back okay, but I-129 is still out there with hundreds of millions of dollars worth of gold on it. This is fact. However, it's 19,000 feet down. How do you get the stuff up from 19,000 feet? It would probably
You'd have to drain the ocean.
Yeah. Well, that's expensive, too, but it would cost probably $2 or $3 for every dollar they brought back up. And
sure,
they did send down an ROV, and they brought up some samples, so they know it's there, but now, send down some scuba divers. People say a scuba diver can't go that deep. Well, yes, they can. They just never come back. So that would be an expensive proposition, too. No, it just, they did have certain voyages, certain operations, where they were carrying valuables. When you
like
won
the gold,
8-0,
the
which,
gold train.
Which was, yeah, well, yeah, right, the gold train.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, back to reality. You won 8-0, which was a very rare boat. There was only two of them made, Type 9D1 boats. And our friend Otto Dietz was the corpsman on board U-180. Mm-hmm. They call him Sonnestate's mate. And they had some valuable stuff to go to the Japanese, and they also had Subhas Chandra's Bose on board, and his assistant, Dr. Aben Hassan. So Otto Dietz didn't have a lot to do, so he got to talk to Bose quite a bit, and we got a lot of that stuff here, but that has nothing to do with today. So we look at photo number one, and that's a young Otto Wehrmuth, the skipper of U-530, who became a member of Shark Hunters and up until his death. Number two, this is the galloping ghost, I guess you'd call him. That's Heinz Schaefer, skipper of U-977, the other boat that surrendered in Mar del Plata.
Mm-hmm.
I call him the galloping ghost because we tried to find him, and we finally found out where he was, and doggone it, he died, so we couldn't get a hold of him. Then 6, 7, 8 months later, we found out, no, he ain't dead. So we go finding him again. He died 3 or 4 times before he really did die. I think he just didn't want to be located. I'm in contact with his...
Was he in Germany?
No, he was one of the directors of Mercedes of Argentina,
which is
where Eichmann had been working on the assembly line when the Mossad grabbed him.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been in limited contact with Schaefer's son, Pedro. But Pedro keeps telling me that I know more about his father's son or father's boat than he does. I don't think that's quite accurate.
No, there's probably a footlocker of material there somewhere.
Right.
Look at the picture of him. It looks like Hollywood central casting. Send us a U-boat skipper.
He's a dapper-looking guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, and he performed another magical act. When he left his home base in Norway, you know, fuel was short, so they only gave him 3/4 of a fuel load. He went down to his assigned area off England, got the word that the war was over, and he got a surrender. He turned around and came back to Norway, offloaded the married men, and then went all the way down to Mar del Plata, which is way, way, way farther than he could have made it, even if he'd had a full fuel load.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, right. So he claimed in his book that he saved fuel by snorkeling for 66 uh-huh. days. Well, that's ridiculous. When you're snorkeling, you're still running the diesel. And instead of just the streamlined hull going through the water, you've got the conning tower and everything up there, which increases your parasite drag. Right, so yeah. you're using more fuel than if you'd have been on the surface. So that, you
Best
know.
Best guess as to where he got the fuel? On shore somewhere in a harbor? Or was there still some milch cows running around?
No, I don't think there were any milch cows left. And from Peter Hansen, who's the only guy in the whole world that knows more about U-boats than I do, he told me that when Schaefer got back to Norway, he found some way to fill up his tanks, either trading booze or cigarettes or something to the shore guys, because the black market was rampant at that time. And he claims that's the way he was able to top off his tanks and maybe put some fuel in some other tanks.
Is that
we
an 8,000-mile trip? How long is that?
Well, if you're going at 10 knots...
From Norway.
Yeah, you figure it out. 8,000 miles at 10 miles an hour. Well, 10 knots is a little more than that, but use it for a rule of thumb. 10 miles an hour, 8,000 miles, that's a long way. But it's possible.
Well, at least if you look at the map, at least it's downhill, so maybe he let gravity do some
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, that's true, downhill. Okay, I wish I'd have thought of that.
That's all right.
Next so, that's a Type 7, and they just don't have the long legs. U-530 was a Type 9. I think it was a C-4142, which has the cutaway foredeck. You look at photo number 3, you know, click on the photo, it enlarges. Yay, Norberto, he's a whiz. You notice the cutaway foredeck. That was later models of the Type 9s because originally they had this big wide casing and they hung on the surface. So their yeah. diving time was 5-10 seconds longer with the broad casing and the deck. So they cut back, and here we see 530 on its way. This was provided to me by Andres. And it had the legs to get down there. You look at number 4.
Wait, hold on before we leave number 3.
Yeah.
Two quick things. The distance,
sure.
I was close, is 12,470 kilometers, 7,747 miles.
Okay.
So it's almost 8,000 miles. Probably
yeah.
is 8,000. So that's a long haul.
A lot of diesel fuel.
Yes. Question number 2, in photo number 3, that's the cut on the deck you're talking about. It looks like a collision. I just want to make that clear to people.
No, that's definite plan. You see, the 6 guys standing on the deck, and just forward
yes.
of that is the big cut.
I
and
see.
And that's deliberate, so they right. could dive faster.
Gotcha. Okay, I just want to make sure everybody understood that.
Right.
Looks like almost damaged at a quick glance. Yeah. All right.
Nope. But those subs had the range. But, again, U-530 had fuel to go to New York and back. And when they got to New York and they fired at a couple ships, they were there 3, 4, 5 days, whatever. I'd have to look at the file. And then they got the surrender order. So they were close to the American coast. They could have surrendered to the U.S. But a few of the crew had relatives in Chile. So they thought they'd go to Chile and surrender there, which would not be much of a surrender because in Chile they were not turning over the Germans to the Allies. So, and remember, Argentina only declared war against the United States about 2 weeks before the German surrender, and that was only on paper anyhow. But anyhow, they got down south of Punta Mogotes, and they got into such heavy weather that they used up all their fuel, or too much of the fuel, and they could not make it to Chile. So they put back to Mar del Plata. And we've got a bunch more information about that. We've got the surrender copy of the surrender document, et cetera, which not up here today because it isn't all that important. But number 4 is a It's a photo we got from a fellow you and I both know and love down there in Buenos Aires who should go nameless.
Really?
That's nice. Yeah, well, he's provided a whole lot of photos and a whole lot of information about the stuff we're interested in.
Yes.
Not tables and chairs, but submarines and stuff. So that came
look
from...
Look at that boat. Look at that 530. What a sleek... Mm-hmm. What a sleek piece of engineering that was. It looks like what boats ought to look like today. Well, they look like today. There's huge, giant monster boats, but that thing is sleek.
Oh, yeah. This boat here is about 1,200 tons, roughly, displacement, whereas our boomer boats today, they're 8,000 tons, yeah. And the Russian... we call them the Typhoon class. I forget what the Russians call them. 48,000 tons.
That's
48,000 tons.
Yeah.
The early battleships weren't that big.
No, they're immense.
Yep. But they, on the Russian Typhoon, they had an aviary on board. Maybe that was because it's nice and lift your spirits, or also maybe it was why the same reason the miners had the canaries down in the tunnels. I don't know. They also had a bagnio.
You say they had? What do you mean they had an aviary on board? They had chickens?
No, birds flying around.
In the boat?
Well, maybe they, I don't know. No, from what I understand from the Russians I talked to, you know, the tropical kind of birds flying around.
Interesting. All right.
And they also had a bagnio, which is a small steam room, and the ice-cold pool, although very tiny on a submarine, that you would jump into. When I was in Moscow, they kept inviting me to join in the bagnio, which is a big social event. You get into the steam room, and you get all sweatied up with the steam, and then they've got birch branches in there in a charcoal fire, and you're supposed to pull the branches out and beat yourself on the back with the flaming end and then jump into the ice cold water. I said thanks, but it's not what I think I would like to do for a hobby. And one day my friend Anatoly, who was my guide, who turned out to be chief of intelligence for the Soviet Navy, he came to breakfast one morning with his hand all bandaged up. He had grabbed the wrong end of the flaming birch branch. He grabbed the end that was on fire. Let me hasten to add, they did a lot of vodka in these bagnios.
Yeah, to kill the pain. I get it.
Apparently so. I don't know. I never got into drinking vodka with the Russians. You try to match them, and you have no chance.
Yes. All right. I could tell some stories about that, too, but I won't. Next, number five.
Cinco. Right. This is U-530, but you'll notice it has all Argentine sailors on it. This is after she came in and surrendered.
Uh-huh.
And the Argentine sailors were on board. And then if you look at number six, that's part of the crew on shore. The guy standing there way on the left, standing there looking straight at the camera, that's Wermuth.
Really?
The skipper.
Looks like he has a beret on or a Navy cap.
Well, it's a Navy cap, yeah. I won't tell you what we called him when I was in the service, because even though it's a private radio station, it's still a pretty crude word.
Well, you never use crude words to me, so thank you.
I know.
Look at picture number five. You can see the cutout again on the other side of the boat.
Right. It narrowed the hull at that point.
Yeah, okay.
So they could get down quicker.
Yep.
You know, the American boats took about 30 seconds to get under. And if a German boat took 30 seconds to get under, he would never come back up because they didn't have the early warning stuff. They had early warning devices, but nothing like they really needed. If an airplane was coming in hot at 300 miles an hour, they had to get down fast.
I'll never forget that one picture you sent me of that one German crewman in the water, and his boat had gone down, and he was waving at the PBY that was flying, like, overhead. I think it was a PBY, at any rate.
Right. That would have been U-156.
Yeah.
Under Hartenstein.
Very poignant picture.
Yeah, because... And altogether, there were about six guys in the water, and the PBY came by and dropped life rafts to them, because not only it's humanitarian to rescue these guys, but also they were high-value intelligence targets.
I would think so.
But unfortunately, they sent some destroyers out to find these guys, and they never found them, so everybody on U-156 was lost.
Well, that one picture was very, you don't forget that one. Okay. Number seven.
Number seven. That's Wermuth himself. And that's not a Bray. That's a regular field cap.
Got it.
As opposed to the wide brim hat for parades.
Well, see the guy on the right? He's got a round cap. It's different.
It looks round, but that's only because he's got it squashed down on his head.
Oh, that's the angle. Okay.
Right. He's a big guy.
Yeah, he is. Look at the slickers they're wearing.
Well, yeah, those are their leathers.
Waterproof.
Right, and fur-lined. I've got a jacket here that I've been trying to sell for a million years because it doesn't have a whole lot of historical significance. It's just a jacket that somebody wore on a U-boat.
The guy on the right, a double-breasted jacket, a big, huge
coat
like that?
Right, that's what we have here. It's big, it's heavy. And was it worn by somebody famous? I don't have the faintest idea, and my guess is probably not.
He wore it.
Yeah, okay.
So there
but
you
I
go.
Was never on the U-boats.
It fits you?
Yeah.
Huh? You can't sell that. Keep it. Just the iron
I really
cross.
Don't need a heavy fur-lined coat in Florida.
But we do up here in the Great Northwest. We're supposed to get snow next week.
Oh. Tough shit. That's why we don't live in Chicago anymore. That plus the bullets flying around all the time.
Oh, that's it. Did you see the story that Venezuelan invaders all the way across the border, all the way up to Chicago? Yeah, they went home. They couldn't take the crime in Chicago.
Yeah, they're unhappy that they have to sleep on the ground. Stay home. Stay home.
Okay.
And the mayors of cities like Chicago, New York, et cetera, they're saying, wait a minute, we only said we were a sanctuary city. We really didn't mean it.
Right.
So
you saw what happened
in
New York. Go ahead. Finish.
No, I was going to say, do what Ron DeSantis did. Fly them all to Martha's Vineyard and watch the National Guard come out to throw these people off this high buck island.
Right.
Yeah, we said we were a sanctuary place, but we was only kidding. It was self-serving.
Right. Adams in New York City, he's saying the city will founder and die soon. At any rate, they had a whole bunch of these people put up in the Roosevelt Hotel, very high-end, in the old days, hotel. Still in good shape. And they bust them to their new digs, which was a big tent city. And they had video of it. And the buses pulled up, or the one big bus, and they got out. Some of them got out, went in, looked at the tents, turned around basically and went right back to the bus and said, take us back to the hotel. We're not getting out.
Yeah.
They refused. So they were taken elsewhere. The attitude of these people is astounding.
Right.
Number eight.
When the other people, like my mom's parents, my wife's grandparents on both sides, they came here, they had a sponsor who said, I'm going to make sure this person takes care of themselves. They got a job. They worked. My grandfather ultimately paid cash for a very nice two-flat bungalow in Chicago. Then he paid cash for a farm. He paid cash for his houses, because he worked for it. He earned it. And now all they can say is, hey, where's the welfare line? And give me the Obama phone. Remember the Obama phones? Well, they don't call them that anymore, I guess, but everybody's getting a free phone, free medical.
Everybody that comes across the border gets a phone. They get baseline $2,200 a month. That's for rent and expenses.
Yeah.
And then they get everything else you can imagine covered.
Yep.
While Americans are literally on the streets. See, this country's
in this little Dinkwater County I live in, there's at least 400 they know of, 400 veterans living in the woods.
Disgusting.
It's thoroughly disgusting.
No, it's well, I'll tell you what it is, Harry. It's treasonous to treat Americans
at
the expense.
Yeah.
No, it's treason. You don't do that. We're being overrun with full intent. It's obvious, and it's treason. I don't mind saying it. I don't know how else you'd interpret it. All right, let's get back to pictures. Number eight.
Hold on. I'm just fielding emails as they're coming in. Number eight. Okay, this, I believe, is the arrest document for Vermouth down there in Mar del Plata. We also have a copy of, I think I said, we have a copy of the surrender document.
Look how classy. The guy's getting arrested. He dressed up. Look, he's class. That's a class act.
He's
That's
in his
amazing.
Uniform.
Yep.
That's the way they did it back in those days.
I know. All right.
Yep.
Number nine.
That's, number nine. That was the...
I don't know where
we don't have a number nine. Somebody stole my number nine. Actually, I screwed up in the numbering. Let's face it.
So 10 is 9?
Let's jump right to number 10.
All right. Number 10.
Number 10. That's U-977. That was Schaefer's boat. The one that made it 8,000 miles, et cetera. And look at it, and you look at the pictures of 530. Both of them look pretty shabby.
They look like they've been through fires and dirt and debris and all kinds of things.
Right. According to one of our members, who was one of our SIEG agents, he sent some photos of 530 also. It looked like it was all burned and the paint was peeled off and everything, and he claimed it had some kind of chemical, whatever was on board, that reacted, that also helped deter incoming radar from finding them. It's in another one of our books. It's in Hitler and the Secret Alliance.
Got it. Well, 977 looks like it's definitely had some severe cosmetic issues.
Mm-hmm. And yet, when the war was over, and these boats surrendered quite a while after the war was over, 530 was in the middle of July, 977 was about 8 days later, whatever, in early August, I think. Instead of just taking them out and pulling the plug on them, they brought them all the way back to the United States and then used them for torpedo targets in 1947. Where the hell's the sense there?
That's total stupidity.
Yeah, our government, I don't think any government is well known for intelligence.
Not that kind of intelligence, for sure.
Right. So photo 11, we see the two surrendered boats. 977 is on the left. That's the Type 7. It's smaller, narrower. You see the big bulge saddle tanks on the 7. That's what shows off a 7 above everything else. Plus, up forward, the limber holes, they have the diagonal limber holes. Most Type 7s had those diagonal limber holes, but not all. But all of them had the saddle tanks. And that's what killed one of the skippers. What the heck was his name? It'll come to me in a little while. U-203, I believe it was. They were in a safe area in the middle of the ocean. Everything was calm. He was letting his crew swim in the water, you know, in workable numbers. He decided to dive off the conning tower, and he forgot the saddle tanks were sticking out. He hit his, broke his neck. Killed him, and they had to take his body back, break off the patrol.
Oh, weird.
I forget who he was, but that that's easy to, I got so much stuck in my head. So let's look again at number 12. That's U977. You see the diagonal limber holes up forward. Mm-hmm. Then you see the big saddle tanks.
Those are air tanks.
Right. Well, they call them saddle tanks because they look like saddlebags. Right. But, yeah, those are ballast tanks.
All right. Very good. Number 13.
Well, we see U530 with the big cutaway foredeck and 977. This was a photo that Andres supplied us. So,
how many boats had the cutaway surgery?
After about 1943 or so, they were all made with the cutaway foredeck. And you'll notice that most of them did not have a deck gun after about 1943 because they couldn't stay on the surface long enough to use a deck gun. If they stay on the surface, they got airplanes overhead, and then next thing you know, they're blown out of the water.
Right. All right, well, there are palm trees there on the right, so this appears to be where they're, surrendering here?
That would be my guess. It was either that or a cruising on Lake Okeechobee, but I don't think that's... Especially, Okeechobee's only 15 feet deep at the deepest, I think. A submarine needs a hell of a lot more than 15 feet. So, yeah, I would guess this is when they came in, Mar del Plata. I've been down there, and I don't remember seeing any structures like this one, but it could have been taken away after the war, the building there could have been knocked down. Who knows? Maybe I didn't get to that part. Beautiful area, Mar del Plata.
Okay, number 14. The faceless man in the middle.
Right, that's SIG agent Pizarro.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any photos of him at all where you can see the face. He was a good friend. We'd go drinking together. We'd meet in the dark corner of the Il Casale pizza shop where he'd slip me packets full of photographs and documents, but I never got a picture of him, and unfortunately he died under very strange circumstances, and his son turned into a real jerk. So,
I remember this story.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too bad.
The guy on the right, that's Otto Wermuth, the skipper of 530.
And I wonder if that's Otto's book that your SIG agent is looking at. Is Otto showing off his
scrapbook? Oh, that's another file that he's... it's another file he's keeping. That was probably stuff on U530. That's part of the Delta files, which we have here. Mm-hmm. And I was getting them translated to put them into their own book, but other things came up, and that's been shelved for a while. The guy on the left is Charlie Gritzemacher. He was Oberleutnant Zersee engineer on U-427, and he said that they had, when the war ended, they had a Type 7, but they had filled all the fuel tanks with diesel fuel. They filled all the fresh water tanks with diesel fuel. They filled everything they could with diesel fuel. They were going to run away to Tahiti. And I asked him, why Tahiti? He says, every sailor wants to go to Tahiti. But unfortunately for them, what the heck's his name? The guy, Teddy Surin, he was FDU Nord, commander of all the U-boat flotillas in the north. And they were under orders to surrender because the war ended. And they were under orders to surrender their vessels to the Allies. And so he said that he would personally shoot any officer on any U-boat that tried to escape. So they all pumped the diesel fuel back out of their submarines and just sat there waiting for the Brits to come and get them.
That's kind of unfortunate to hear. You'd think a lot of the guys would have said, the captains, who wants to go? We're leaving. We're going to make our way somewhere. I'm sure some of the boats got away. They just didn't go back to port. But whatever happened, who knows? That's
we do.
Yeah.
But that's another story. That's another bunch of stories.
All right. Number 15. Looks like a familiar book.
Self-promotion here. This is the book on Hitler's escape. Absolute factual. No smoke. No bull stuff. No fantasy like the other guys wrote. Hard evidence backed up with about 100 pages that are FBI files, CIA files. Some of the letters from Don Angel are in there. Some of the letters from Otto Wermuth are in there. So this book can be gotten on our website, sharkhunters.com. However, since I'm on your show tonight, I'll make a special offer. Normally the book is $25 plus $9 shipping, and if you go to our website, that's what you'll pay. But people can send an email to us, sharkhunters@sharkhunters.com, or call us on 352-637-2917. And instead of $25, it's $20. And instead of $9 shipping, we'll pay the shipping. So instead of $34, it's $20 delivered. But you got to act fast.
Better than that.
Yeah. You got to act fast, because, and they make great stocking stuffers for Christmas.
It is literally one of the most important history books of the last 100 years. It tells the truth.
Yeah.
What really happened. It puts
and
that
we owe a lot of that
to
Don Angel.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, we're coming up to him in a minute.
Remember that cover?
Yeah, I know. Your friend Dees designed it, and you helped him. You're the one that put in that clip about the documented truth of Hitler's escape from Berlin. And you also insisted that we put the Ju-390 up there, which is how he got out. I was at the landing spot in Uruguay near the near the little village of Paysandú.
I also put the red dot below Bariloche so people could
see. Yes, right. Yeah, you did that too.
Oh, it's fun.
I appreciate
days.
It. It's a good-looking cover.
Oh, no. It's a nice cover. It tells the story. I moved Hitler and Eva Braun around a little bit so they looked a little closer. He was standing a little bit further away from her, so we moved that around, and it just came out to be a great book. We don't want people to think of that U-boat as having taken Adolf and Eva anywhere. That's not
That's
the
correct.
Point. It's just a picture of UFO, of World War II history that people often confuse. The truth is flying above. It's right behind the bestseller sticker.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Ju-390?
Yeah.
V-2.
We think that plane may still be around, hidden away in a hangar somewhere in South America.
It was, and it was operating until 1966, and our mutual friend told me it was in that hangar in Paraguay. And I said, "Whoa, tell me where it is, because I have no problem going past a sign that says Ein Gang Verboten or No Pesar, because I can go talk my best down yonder hillbilly to the cops." Yeah. And he said, "It's not the police. It's a private estate with guards that have orders to shoot to kill."
So it's still there.
Well,
that's nice.
Yeah, could be. I am not going to stick my neck out to get shot.
I wouldn't either. All right, well, let's stick our necks out and take a little break. When we come back, we have a special guest. Go ahead and give us his name, and we're going to ask you to take a look at the website, and we're going to jump into this discovered black boat that has been found officially.
I'll throw in one quick little shot, because I know this, and I'm not sure Andres knows it until we talked. We've been in a lot of contact in the last couple of weeks, but when Don Angel rode a submarine down to South America with Martin Bormann, and they offloaded everybody at Punta, whatever the hell I said it was, way at the far southern end, Puerto Coig. And then the skipper said they were going to go back two-thirds of the way to Buenos Aires and scuttle the boat. I believe this is that very same boat that Don Angel rowed down to Puerto Coig with Martin Borman, you know, the guy that got killed dead in the tank battle in 1945.
Right. That's right. Uh-huh. All right.
A lot of them guys are tough. They didn't die when they're supposed to.
Yeah, nine lives.
Yeah.
Picture number 18 and 19 are photos of Don Angel, so look at that while we're away on our little break, and we will come right back with more.